We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
I don't know where you guys get ideas for brands and where you shop, but a lot of it is still, I mean, my Lord, we're on the web all day, every day. But the amount of products I am actually trying, it's still from friends, right? It's the referrals of the people you trust, you like their style, what, you know, and that's obviously where influencer marketing grew out of and where, you know, affiliate marketing grew out of. But going back to basics in this day and age of connecting with people when you can't be physically with them, you know, I know we start a lot of our Zoom calls with, I found these, you know, I found this item. It keeps my drink cold for 67 hours while I'm on Zoom meetings, you know, whatever it is. That's still such a fantastic way of connecting with, you know, a brand is a friend talking about this.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. In this episode, we'll be chatting about emerging retail trends and how they're changing the way we shop and interact with retailers. Today, I'm handing over the microphone to my friend, my colleague, and my sometimes co-host, Chris Stewart. Take it away, Chris.
COVID-19 has accelerated retail and shaped behavior for all consumers, from Gen Z to baby boomers. In just a few short months, we've seen soaring demand for essential products like toilet paper, and we've stocked up on merchandise like toys and cooking supplies that brought us comfort and kept us entertained while in quarantine. We opted for contactless payments, increased shopping via mobile apps, and celebrated holidays like Easter and Mother's Day from a social distance. We also saw retailers expanding digital offerings to help us get the items we need right now through methods like curbside pickup and buy online pickup in store. As retailers continue to create omni-channel experiences that transform the way we buy, how are we as consumers changing and what trends are here to stay? Susan Retta and Jill Dvorak join me to discuss the retailer and consumer journey since the onset of the coronavirus and what these noteworthy trends could mean for the future of retail. Hey, Susan. Hey, Jill.
Hi, Chris. Great to see you.
Great to be here, Chris.
Good to see you guys. Okay, so, you know, a couple of things have been going on since mid-March, and we keep hearing that the pace of change and has been accelerated to where things that they thought would take, that we thought would take 5 to 10 years have happened in 5 months. So what does it look like moving forward? What is the bricks and mortar, the physical store, the in-store shopping experience look like in the future?
Well, I'll take a quick stab and then turn to Susan, who always has phenomenal examples and is great at our researching. So I think it's really two main things right now, I think, for brick and mortar stores. It is, you know, stores have always had a phenomenal conversion. When people come into a store, they typically convert better than if they're browsing a website. So that's always been true. But now I think for the stores that are open in safe, socially distanced, you know, in healthy environments, they're seeing even higher in-store conversion. Because now you have to mask up, you have to, you know, really have an idea that you're going to get the item you are looking for. So two things are important. You mentioned digital acceleration, but the inventory, being able to see the inventory online is really important. So if I'm going to go to Target and I'm looking for, say, a Frisbee, I want to know if they have Frisbees so I'm not just wandering the aisle. And in fact, outside of just knowing they have Frisbees, what aisle is that in? So I can go in and out really quickly, get my, you know, get my item and get out and not just, you know, unfortunately have the leisurely experience that, you know, people used to have in retail stores. So I think that's one, is really seeing this kind of targeted shopper now, but also the service orientation. So maybe I'm going now to pick up my items at the curbside. So I'm not even going into the store. Or maybe I'm, you know, just talking to somebody to give the contactless payment for my item. So there's, I think, a lot more service opportunities here, you know, outside the store walls as well as inside the store walls, that the brick and mortar retailers are able to take advantage of. And I think so many have done a phenomenal job at.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Like, I'm thinking about the changing role of the store associate in that in that world where, you know, they can then also have that their hands on technology that will help them know where the inventory is, and so they can make sure that it's on the shelf when they need it. But also when it comes to that curbside pickup, like, you want to have people who are efficient and friendly and practicing safe, you know, social distancing and all of those things, and making customers feel good about coming to your store.
I read a really interesting piece about how essential retailers were deemed essential. But now, as retail makes its comeback, and it is coming back, every retailer needs to figure out how they're going to be essential to a consumer. And so I think that's that. To what you're saying about the role of the associate, how are we retraining associates so that they're sure that they are essential to that customer? I think I cannot say whether Best Buy is still doing this, but they were doing appointments so that you had that one-to-one, you had the safety, you were still getting information, you were making a large, in most instances with Best Buy, you're making a purchase that is a larger purchase. So you want that interaction, you know. And some of the things I read about as I was trying to just prepare for this were, you know, thinking about home goods stores. You've got IKEA on one end, which is opening price point value, but the experience, you still want to go there. Yes. You want the meatballs. Yes. You want, you know, it's just fun. But on the other side, you've got Restoration Hardware, and they'll serve you a cocktail while you shop. So, you know, to Jill's point, yes, I'm going to do my digital homework. But when I get in there, I want the feel goods. I want you to remind me why I really still like coming to the store. And it's those little wow things that make me want to continue to shop and make me now essential to you, and make people line up around TJ Maxx because of the thrill of the hunt. You know, I was in TJ Maxx 2 weeks ago, and I just could not wait to get back in there. And I spent a whopping $46 on like soap and picture frame. I couldn't have been happier. Yeah. And every person on that line was like, I haven't been here since. Oh my God, we're here. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, for sure. Man, what about the changes that stores are having to go through though to ensure that customers do feel safe when they're shopping? You know, it's more than just putting the stickers on the floor. It starts there, right? But what else are you seeing, and what else are stores doing or retailers doing?
I mean, I think to Susan's point, it's retraining the associates, right? So it's more than stickers and masks. Mm-hmm. It's, do you have doors that need to be touched to be opened? You know, do you, when you walk in, are there, you know, directional arrows, you know, in your store? And it also depends, obviously, on what type of store you are. A grocery store, you know, a lot of people are maybe going up and down most of the aisles, where if you're I almost said Blockbuster. That was really, I just aged myself. Aww. I'm sorry. Yeah, let's bring them back. You know, but if you're going for, you know, one specific item, if you're going into a CVS and you know you just need Q-tips, you know, maybe you won't shop the whole store. So I think it depends both on the type of store you are, as well as what the employees are being asked to do. But the clienteling solutions that some of the retailers have put out, meaning the solutions of that's running the tablet that maybe the store associates, you know, are holding. Yep. So that will tell you inventory. Yep. It will tell you aisle number. It will tell you if there's more in the back. You know, it really tells you everything about the store, and you don't have to interact with multiple people. I mean, that real ease of use, the quick experience, the fast in and out, if that's what the consumer wants. But outside of that, I think a lot of stores have seen, to Susan's point, people are coming back to browse. So it's people, you know, the dollar stores, Dollar General, Dollar Tree, they've had capacity issues. They have to keep people outside, and they've had capacity issues almost the whole time, right? You know, whether they're not huge footprint stores. But it's been very, very interesting. They have to monitor their people in the store by the state, by the county. And that is really hard to keep up with. And it's really hard to then communicate to employees, obviously when that changes. So there has been so much for these store associates to manage. And, you know, I think they're doing a fantastic job, and hopefully everyone is thanking them, thanking a retail worker, you know?
I also think that when we go in the store now as a consumer, I mean, for us shopping, we're always looking at so many different things and with a different set of eyes. But if you just think of yourself as the consumer, I'm really taken with how much retailers have put in place. You know, back to my TJSX example, there were people on the floor. They were all wearing masks. They still offered to help you find something. But when you're waiting on the line and you're social distancing there, that's a little odd because the line got longer than ever. But watching the cash, the associate who was checking you out, wipe single down person. Everything yes. after every single person. You know, this is these people being asked to do so much more. And to your point, Joe, we just so need to appreciate that. But I think, you know, we can go in the other direction and look at what retailers are doing using technology to change the in-store experience. So here's where things like virtual fitting rooms come into play. And here's where things like that idea of, if you're a luxury retailer and you've made that interaction online, you can actually kind of build a fitting room for somebody so that when they get there, the garments are ready for them. Now, I don't have that experience because I shop at TJ Maxx, but, and I'm very proud of that. But nonetheless, if I was a true luxury customer, I think I'd get a real buzz out of that. Like, okay, I saw that skirt. Oh my God, is it going to fit me? Virtually it did. So, you know, just that whole high touch that you can really enable once you're in the store. And again, then you're building your brand loyalty, you're building the brand. Like, it just all comes together.
Yeah. And pivoting off the kind of digital point, then even further taking the in-store experience for categories that are just continue to boom, home, office, you know, really even some of the, you know, decoration categories, you know, things from Pinterest, exactly.
Hobbies.
Yep. You look at some of the AR technologies, the show it in home, you know, there's always been technology where you can change the fabric swatch on your screen, but then to see that couch in your house with the fabric swatch in the ratio of your room, all of those things are those intangibles that now are more important than ever. I mean, I can't imagine people sending a couch back in regular times, but now what are retailers doing with that inventory? You know, it has a whole other side of complexities when you're getting returned merchandise in COVID times. There's cleaning, there's sitting in warehouses, there's steam cleanings, there's all sorts of kind of technologies that help them. But again, for custom products that you're making, you know, it's really a complex kind of supply chain outside of just that last mile piece.
The custom point is a good one, Jill, because, you know, there's a real opportunity now because retailers are paying attention to their inventory levels, and they don't want to, if they don't have to create inventory without knowing for sure, you know, we just looked at the hair care company Pros, and that's one of the things they say, you know, we have such a low waste rate because nothing is created until an order is placed. And I think that as technology is increasing, it's going to enable more and more brands to really make, you know, objects on demand. And, you know, there's been these, you know, companies like eShakti, I think is the name of the online retailer, where you can, you know, you get this basic dress, but then you can really customize it. And then, you know, the sleeve length, the collar, the length of the hem, pockets, however many pockets you want, whatever.
I want the dress that's a cargo
all
dress.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Like every single.
It's got to be very flattering.
No,
on
I'm
the
sorry.
Figure.
That's not in for fall. Cargo's totally out for fall. Okay.
The pockets are always in, right? Guys, pockets on leggings, side note, is game changing. Game changing. Yes.
100%. I've stopped buying leggings without pockets.
They don't add bulk, they just add function. Yes. That's my platform. Yes. Great.
But I'm so with you on the personalization. And it's interesting that I think the consumer, as we've progressed, we're learning that it's okay to wait for it because it's going to be ours and it's going to be uniquely ours. And there's a patience factor that consumers didn't have 2 years ago because all we wanted was, I want it now, I want it now. It's got to be trend right.
And such
I want
a good point.
So now we're willing to wait a little bit. And I think because we all see ourselves as such unique individuals, I mean, you know, I don't know. For my crappy hair, maybe pros can help. I should try.
And that is, even to the waiting point, the amount of retailers early on that said, you know, supply chain, we have limited warehouse workers, your order may take longer. But, you know, a lot of companies have not been able to catch up, obviously, whether they were deemed essential or not, you know, and we can make clearly a very easy argument that all of retail is essential. You're able to continue, you know, transacting, whether it's food or whether it's clothing. I mean, we would all say a lot of these items are essential. But beyond the communicating to the customer what's going to happen, I've seen a lot of them talk about the safety, not only of the product, but the safety of the employees. And I think that message that retailers got out very early on, like Domino's, was that I think one of the first emails I got about their employees and all of the ways we are keeping them safe in delivering our product to you. You know, contactless delivery first. Like, we will leave it on your doorstep. We will take a picture of it, and we will just very, very clear of all of our employees. That is our first priority. And, you know, I think taking the safety aspect, and consumers understand that, consumers get it, and they're willing to wait. I mean, you know, the bellwether of Amazon, you know, everything raced to try to be as quick as Amazon to your door. And even Amazon had issues. So I do think there was somewhat of an awakening of not everything has to be immediate. Not everything has to be now. There's a good number of companies, you know, Rothy's, or, you know, even Adidas does this some point, the 3D printing. And they, you know, when they own their whole supply chain, you really can pivot and change your inventory to meet demand. You know, you might be out of stock for a little while, but again, you're not putting your company's potentially financial future at risk. You know, Gap announced a fantastic program, which years ago might have been less sexy, but they're doing a, you know, look, we have this inventory from spring. We are going to still sell it, and we are going to sell it to you at maybe a little bit less of a price. But we're not going to keep rushing and doing the next season and the next season and the next season and just wind up with extra clothes. We're going to be responsible. We're going to recycle it. We're going to reuse it. And, you know, going back to sustainability has been a conversation, but a lot of companies took a pause on it to just survive. And I think putting those two kind of themes together was a really, really smart and sustainable, financially sustainable way for these companies to continue.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the whole idea of value-based shopping, where, you know, consumers are maybe being a little bit more thoughtful about where they're spending their money, and they're really looking for these retailers that are making a priority of taking care of their employees, of taking care of their communities, whether that's in terms of the coronavirus pandemic, whether it's in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement, where it's those companies that are putting their money where their mouth is, aren't just putting up a clever thing on social media, but actually actively encouraging their employees and their communities and supporting them. You know, we're seeing a number of retailers giving their employees the day to vote, the day to go work at the election polls. I mean, that's what consumers are looking for.
I think that
now
all matters and continues to matter. And particularly with Gen Z, the customer we have to look at, because they're coming on strong and they're going to change retail based on their actions. And I, you know, they have pivoted from vendors who made mistakes. And I think it's really difficult to go back once you've made a mistake with that group, because they're very passionate about their feelings and their passions, whatever they may be around.
They're loyal to their passions. You're right. And not loyal to a brand. You're right.
No. Really so, good. And I think, I'm just seeing more people make choices that are responsible to sustainability. And I'm hearing more CEOs talk about the word sustainability and a commitment that isn't just lip service. So, and I'm also seeing more people change the way they're marketing. So they're talking about sustainability, but they're talking about diversity. and they're using different types of people. They're putting what America looks like on their screens, finally. And so, you know, I love seeing a size 14 model. Did I reveal too much? Oh my God. But I just think that it's real.
Yeah. It's the average size.
It is. No, and that's so funny. I was shopping for jeans and I was, you know, you, like, here's like the first image that comes up online is like the, whatever the model wears a size 4. And then it's like, oh, would you like to see it in your size? And they show it in your size. And I'm like, oh, well, that looked really good on her. Okay.
Well, that's truth in advertising. That was one, you know, overseeing and helping out with the marketing executive council at NRF. The biggest thing I heard from all of the CMOs that, you know, represent our members is the going back to the authenticity of marketing during this. So you couldn't have fancy photo shoots in remote beaches with models and photographers and rolling around in the sand. And you couldn't have that. So what did you do? You photographed the product in employees' homes, in a office, like in a very authentic way. And you saw a lot of these founder-led brands, you know, the Honest Company with Jessica Alba, the Keen Footwear Company with their founders, just wearing the product and talking about it. And hey, guys, that's what influencers do, and you have to pay them. So to actually go back and look at the authentic user or, you know, kind of creator of the product, it was really like going back to basics. It's not the glam shots. You can always digitally make things look better with lighting, but it made a lot of sense. Catalogs, I'm really excited to see how this has affected kind of the catalog side of the industry, you know, the LL Beans, the, you know, Restoration Hardwares. How did they pivot to make that, you know, they had one shot for their catalog and one shot for their website. So how is it now kind of syncing up and being a true kind of omni-channel look at their product? So I'm excited to see how that changed, but the authentic marketing, kind of just stripping back the, you know, the layer of putting on a front, I mean, it was gone. So I think that's something that should hopefully continue, and people have responded in kind to it.
I think it's interesting to, I can be very emotional very quickly, as some people know. So I think about television, and like there was a commercial for Zillow Real Estate, and it was just, it was quick. I think it was 30 seconds, but it was about home and where we are now and how important it was. And in seconds, the tears are running down my face. Like, so I think I need to sell. Bye. Whatever. But Nike, the same way. It just, it pulled you in and it said, this is what it's all about right now. And those connections will matter for a long time to come. I know Nike has been a more interesting brand, but I think some of their commercials and a lot of them just really connect with consumers.
That's absolutely true.
Talking about that authenticity, I think something that's really interesting that's happening is the use of user-generated content where, you know, I was just on ThredUp's website this afternoon.
Obviously.
For research,
of course.
Purely for research. And I mean, you know, the whole website, I mean, the whole homepage is just like Instagrams of different people who've shopped there, and then it's just like wearing these cute little outfits and they've got their Instagram handle, and it's just very much like, oh, that's cute. And so that, you know, they're really embracing that user generated content, and it's so smart because, like you say, this is what you get from influencers that you're paying, but they're just doing it because they love your brand and look at my awesome shoes that I got from Keen or wherever.
But posting pictures of myself, I'm like, oh, nobody's gonna buy based on the size of those hips. Come on, they'll be like, really? But reviews, I do continue to think, are important. And user-generated content for most people is very important.
But, you know, user-generated content is more than just, you know, a picture of me in my outfit. It is a review. It is like a post about, you know, how much I just got these leggings with pockets and they're my favorite thing. And, you know, I was just talking to my running buddy this morning and she's like, yeah, I have some, you know, woman on Twitter that I follow is like, these leggings are awesome. She's like, she lives in New York. She wears a lot of black. Okay, yeah. Go buy them from, you know, Gap or whatever.
It's the same thing. Yeah.
That's user-generated content. And that's priceless.
And you can't, the amount of, you know, Nordstrom does a phenomenal job of this, but the amount of watching the user-generated content, and then they incorporate it back into the description. So I love watching that. You know, you'll see a brand and they'll say, this brand runs large, you know, so order, you know, if you're in between sizes, order a size down. But they're gaining that from the UGC. So the retailers are using it in the proper way. It's more than, you know, my size didn't fit or this or that. It's taking it, and this will be for us to take away, Susan, for research, but are they doing it with machine learning? Or is somebody, you know, are they scraping the site for that and rolling it up, giving that info mm-hmm. back to the merchant or giving that info back to the buying team? Yeah. How is that, like, what does that process look like? And is it accurate? How are they verifying it? Just because you have 30 people who say it's, you know, Amazon has that little, the bar that goes back and forth between yep. too small and too big. And half the people say it's too small and half say it's mm-hmm. too big. Well, now what do I do? So you really, you know, to verify those things, it brings a whole new layer of, you know, opinion into just merchandising of what we thought was a simple legging with pockets, you know?
It's such a great opportunity too for brands to engage with their customers. You know, it's the whole, what is it, the 20-80 rule or whatever, where it's like, you know, you just need to pay attention to those people who are already your customers and really engage with them. And then they're going to stick with you.
And talk about you. You know, I don't know where you guys get ideas for brands of where you shop, but a lot of it is still, I mean, my Lord, we're on the web all day, every day, but the amount of products I am actually trying, it's still from friends, right? It's the referrals of the people you trust, you like their style, what, you know, and that's obviously where influencer marketing grew out of and where, you know, affiliate marketing grew out of, but going back to basics in this day and age of connecting with people when you can't be physically with them, I know we start a lot of our Zoom calls with, I found this item. It keeps my drink cold for 67 hours while I'm on Zoom meetings, you know, whatever it is. That's still such a fantastic way of connecting with, you know, a brand is a friend talking about that.
Well, I think we could probably talk about this for another hour or two. But the good news is, if you would like to learn more about topics like those we've been discussing today, you can go to nrf.com, where you can also register for Chapter 1 of Retail's Big Show, coming to you virtually in January. Susan, Jill, I'm really excited because we've got some, the last part of the show is rapid fire questions.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is rapid fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
So I'm going to ask you both questions. Are you ready?
I get the easy ones.
Sure.
Yeah.
Susan, what's the last thing you bought online?
Leggings.
With pockets?
How did I know?
Jill, if there was a movie made about your life, who would play the role of you?
Oh, who do I want to play the role of me? I'm going to go with yes. Sandra Bullock.
Oh, nice.
Because I feel like everybody loves her. And she's a happy face.
Nice.
And I want people to think about that when they think of me.
That's a good one.
I think you have a happy
face. That's more than one word. I apologize.
Susan, what makes you laugh?
My husband.
Aww. With, not at.
With him or
yes.
at him?
Yeah. It's a quirky sense of humor.
Excellent. Okay, Jill, last question. You get it. What is the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning?
Oh, God. Glare at my son who has woken me. I mean, I pick up my phone, I check the time, I look at him and I shake my head because what he's asking without saying a word is, can I look at the iPad now? And I just shake my head. I look at the clock, I shake my head. I put my phone down and roll back over.
Remember when it was all about Lucky Charms? Now it's about an iPod.
All he wants is the iPad. I know. But it's, you know, at least he comes to me and asks, right?
That's right. There you go.
We'll go with that. It has nothing to do with the fact it's plugged in next to my bed. Nothing to do.
If this has taught us nothing, it is to be thankful for the small mercies and the grace that we get every day.
And iPads.
And iPads. Oh my gosh, the internet.
Thank God for the internet. Thank God. COVID times.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Jill and Susan. I really enjoyed this and I hope you did too.
It was fun. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Jill.
Thanks, Susan. That was fun.